The Tribune, Scranton, Pennsylvania, April 22nd, 1921. One of those wise gentlemen with a zero minus forehead, the kind where his cowlick starts where his eyebrows leave off, pulled the learned remark down on Spruce Street the other day that there was no such thing as Babe Ruth making more than 54 home runs this year. There ain't, huh? Well, Sonny, just pay attention to the day's lesson. Take a peep at the sports tablet this morning and perceive for your own little self where the child Ruth splashed his third circuit smash of the infant season yesterday down in Philadelphia, where Max Athletics are making a desperate effort to finish as high as 10th in the American League races. If you have concluded before this that there was as much of a chance of the terrible thumper of the Yanks breaking his record as there is of Volstead getting pickled, just use the new vacuum sweeper on your thinkery and start all over again. Last year, it was well on in the month of May when the powerful puncher gave birth to his first homer. Here is only 6 or 7 games away from the opening of the season, and George Herman is the father of triplets.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Welcome to This Week in 1920s Baseball. This is Josh, a.k.a. Bucketfoot. Got my man Sweetbread, a.k.a. Matthew, on the line. How you doing, Sweetbread?
Doing well. What's going on?
Man, I love that opening article. That's one of the funniest articles we've found in a while, in my opinion. There is so much there to think about. I mean, to use the vacuum sweeper on your thinkery about. The language is insane.
Ruth had 3 kids? Is that what that-
He started this season. He probably had more than 3 kids. He probably had many more than 3 kids that season. But
that he knew of, yeah.
But he had 3 home runs to start the year. And the author of this article, who is unnamed in the Tribune, describes George Herman as being the father of triplets. So basically what this article is saying, if you can just parse through the insane turns of phrases, is that Ruth is off to a hot start. If you remember at the beginning of last year, he didn't start out that hot. He had a really cold April and then an enormous May. And so, of course, at that time, 54, well, that 1920 season, 54 was the record. So the writer here is saying, you think he's never going to hit more than 54? Ha, look how hot he is in April. So that's basically what he's saying. But man, did he come up with a cool way to put it? I'm going to start pointing out people's zero minus foreheads. What does that mean? I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, he's basically like taking offense to anybody that's predicting that Ruth's never going to be able to match that 54 home runs again, right?
Yeah, he's calling them dummies.
Yeah.
And that line about the A's is funny.
Right, because how many teams are in the American League?
Not 10. I think there's only 8. So that is
10th out of 8, yeah.
Yeah, that's super salty to say, wow, if the A's have a good year, they might climb as high as 10th in the 18 league. That's really bad. And I had to Google the thing about Volstead getting pickled because I was like, what does that mean? And so, you know, some of you might know the Volstead Act was the official name of the Prohibition Amendment. So, or I don't know, the amendment, whatever, but the law that made drinking illegal. That was the Volstead Act. So, the idea of Volstead himself getting pickled, a.k.a. drunk. So that the idea of Ruth hitting more than 54 home runs was like as unlikely as the most famous prohibitionist getting drunk. So that's what he's saying. Also, I like the phrase powerful puncher. That's pretty good. There's so many good turns of phrases in here. And we haven't talked about circuit swats in a while. That's a classic.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
You know, that's a good one.
Circuit splash.
Circuit splash. That's right. He changes it up. Circuit smash.
Smash, yeah.
Smashes and splashes and punches. That's amazing. This guy's the best. He splashed his third circuit smash of the infant season. I mean, just that. That is so good. Round of applause for this unnamed writer.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So
baseball writers, get back to it. Come on.
Get back to it.
We want to hear writing like this again.
We need to get the vacuum sweepers out in our thinkeries. I think that might be that phrase might have legs. I might use that one a lot. But the Yankees aren't doing that great to start the year, are they? Let's hit us with the standings if you have them in front of you.
Yeah, let me pull those up real fast here.
Because we fully expect the Yankees to be slaying, but I gave a quick look at the standings as of today, April 29th.
So they're a little bit, I think they were still a little bit behind what we would be in 2021 in terms of games played, but they, I think we did start a little bit later this year, didn't we? Or I'm trying to remember, maybe we didn't.
A couple days.
But yeah, again, just to remind all of our listeners, I think they usually start about mid-April in 1921, as opposed to early April or the beginning of April. Now, I think even there's been some games in March. So it
truly is an infant season as of
yet. Yeah, so when we did some of our previews last episode, I think, or maybe even before, we really were high on, I think we were high on both New York teams, right?
Absolutely.
And neither of those teams are even in second place in either league. So I'll give you the junior circuit first here, Josh. So we have our reigning Major League champion, World Series champion, Cleveland Spiders, at 10-5.
Wait, they're not the Spiders at this point.
Are they? They're not?
No, they're the Indians.
So we have the Cleveland Indians at 10.
We wish they were the Spiders. We like that.
I want them to go back to the Spiders. I think that's Spiders is a cool animal, and it's a great name. And yes. 10-5.
Hot start.
Yep, hot start. They're tied with Washington, who, you know, a lot of you probably know, is traditional basement dweller. So the Washington Nationals, Senators, aka, you know, one of those, depending on how you want to call them. They're 9-4. So they're tied at the top.
Hot start.
Then you have the Red Sox at 5-5, 2.5 out. The Yankees at 6-6, 2.5 out. So they're all the way in fourth place. White Sox at 4-5. Now they're decimated, I think, at this point, their roster. And we'll talk a little bit more about them later this year, I'm sure. We have our favorite slobs, the St. Louis Browns, 5-7, Detroit 5-7, and then the 8th/10th place team, the Philadelphia Athletics at 3-8, once again in the basement already. Going over to the National League, another hot start for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I think it was last year as well. They started off pretty hot, right?
Yeah, they surprised early.
So they're 11-3, really hot start.
Wow.
They're two games up on the Brooklyn Robins. Okay, that's what I was thinking of, because I think they are the Robins at the time. Yeah. At 9-5, they're two out, and they were in the World Series the previous year, right? I'm trying to remember already.
No, that was the Reds who won it.
The Reds were in 1920 against the Indians.
Yeah. Okay. No, you're right. I'm thinking of 19. I'm thinking of the year they beat the Reds, beat the White Sox.
Yeah. All right. So they're 9-5, two out. The Cubs 6-5, 3.5 out. The Giants, again, that really talented New York Giants team is only at 6-6, 4 out. The Reds at 7-8. The Braves 6-8. The Phillies are not in the basement. They're actually 5-7, pretty respectable. And then the Cardinals have gotten off to a dismal start. They're 1-9. So.
Wow, that is bad.
A lot of difference here in terms of games played. I mean, you can look at some of these. There's, you know, Cleveland's played 15 games and,
yeah,
you know, the White Sox have played 9. So.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Pirates, just postulating, teams that are pitching dominant maybe fare better in the early season. Don't you think it takes longer for hitters to get their groove on? So the Pirates are a defense than pitching first team. So maybe that's why they start out strong. And as the year goes on and weather gets warmer and bats start heating up, they return to the mean. But they started out.
Yeah, and you would put down here, we actually have a tie game, right, today. So
yeah, I happened to see that there was a tie game, and I was just really curious about that because you never see a game that ends in a tie. So I looked it up. It was pretty common. The game that was a tie today, 100 years ago, April 29th, was Washington and the Philadelphia A's. It ended at 3-3, but it just got dark. So they paused the game. They stopped it. Let me explain it better. They didn't pick up the game and finish it. They just replayed it. So the day's game ended in a tie, but actually it just, then they replay the whole game. So you won't see a tie on anybody's record in the standings. You'll just see this game didn't count. Essentially, they played however many innings. They played less than seven, like a rainout, you know. And then you just
So I'm looking at the stats on this. Will these are these going to count towards major league records or
the players? The players' stats.
Yeah.
See, I think so. I think the player stats count. Actually, I don't know. I don't. Maybe not. It's not an official game.
I'm interested to see. And I, you know, that also brought up the interesting point because we've been talked about this a lot last year about how many doubleheaders there were and, you know, rainouts and you played a lot of games. You didn't have lights, so you know you're at the mercy of darkness.
So say you hit like a home run in the first inning and then the game starts to pour and then the game is just called off and then you make it up at a future date.
If you replay the game, technically that home run doesn't count, right? I mean, that's what I understood.
Yeah, it can't, right? Because otherwise you'd have an unfair number of chances.
But then this got me thinking. I said to myself, well, I wonder what it was like back then. Were they all like playing the same amount of games? So I took a peek again at the 1920 standings, and I noticed that some teams played 153 games. Now the full schedule was 154 in 1920, but some teams played 153, some played 154, some played 155, and some played 156.
So I mean, that makes no sense.
Happen? Yeah. Why was that even allowed? We got to look into that.
I could see why, and they have done this in recent years. If there's an absolutely meaningless game late in the, like at the end of the year, that doesn't matter for the standings and it gets rained out, they might not replay it. Or if it gets called, because that's what there have been. I looked it up. There have been some ties in recent years. And the reason that they're ties are because they're really late in the year. They're meaningless for the standings. It starts to rain. They call it. They don't bother to make it up. So you could see a team, or you could see that game just not counting at all. So you could see a team having fewer than the standard. How do you end up with more? How do you end up with an extra game? That's
weird. We have to investigate that. And we have to, I bet you there's been an article written about seasons in which a team has played more, not including our playoffs, right? Like when you have like a game at the end of the season to determine the winner, because I think from what I understand as well, Josh, that those count towards the, like if you had like, you know, 60 home runs or something, right? And 154 games, and then the last game of the season, you and another team were tied and you played another game, like a, you know, like a tie or even a three game series, which is as I've seen that happen in some of the years.
Tiebreaker.
Yeah. Those would count as regular season games towards the record. That's my understanding.
Yeah. So that would explain, I guess, why some teams played extra games because they were tied.
But we didn't have that, did we? In 1920, we didn't have playoff
at the end of the year. I don't think so. Yeah. Not in 1920.
So we got to figure out why that happened and if the stats are being counted. I guess they are. They must be if they're in Baseball Reference like that. So anyway.
And if 154 was, that was the normal, definitely? That was the standard?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
That is very confusing. But that was interesting. And yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about this Washington team. Specifically, one of their players off to a hot start named Bucky Harris, who I know nothing about, but I understand that you do.
Yeah, no, a little bit about him. Yeah, he started off real well. He's actually having a pretty good run here in his early in his career. I think I had heard his name. He's got like one of those classic, you know, like 1940s, you know.
I would have guessed that he's from like the 70s. Because like just making like Bucky, there was a lot of, seems like there were, that was a golden age of Bucky's.
You know, Bucky Harris is like, you know, the alter ego for some superhero or something in the 1940s.
yeah.
No, but he was the winning manager of the 1947 Yankees. So maybe that's what he's best known for. He's in the Hall of Fame, possibly more because of his managerial record. He did manage for like a long time. He managed from like the 1920s up until the 1950s, and he was elected via the Veterans Committee in 1975.
Because of the golden era of Bucky's.
You know what actually first drew me to him when I was looking at stats from this year was he is in the midst of a three-peat of leading the league in hit by pitch.
Nice.
I mean, he must have crowded the plate, or maybe people didn't like him. I don't know. So yeah, so he has, you know, kind of a short career, about 10 full seasons, actually not even 10 full seasons, mostly with the Senators. I think he's player manager towards the end there. And a lifetime, you know, 274 hitter, 352 on base percentage, you know, didn't hit too many home runs. But as far as I can tell, was it, you know, just kind of a very valuable player. But the one anecdote that really stood out to me, so he did actually manage quite a number of teams. He managed the Senators, Tigers, Red Sox, and Phillies, the Yankees, and then back to the Senators and Tigers again. So he really managed a long time. So in the 1940s, our Philadelphia Phillies were sold to this lumber baron, or they call him a lumberman, William Cox, who apparently was a bit of a character.
I like everything about him so far.
Yeah.
And, I like a good lumberman.
Yeah, he's a good lumberman. And I guess he was, you know, makes me think of Steinbrenner, right? Wasn't he like involved with like a shipping or steel or something?
I don't know how Steinbrenner
got in with the Yankees. He really wanted to own the Indians, but kind of was pushed out of there and bought the Yankees and tried to bring success to them pretty quickly by spending money. So it seems like William Cox is a similar kind of guy that really wanted to win right away. And kind of a character. So he and Bucky did not get along well. Bucky was fired mid-season in 1943. But the big story was at the end of the season, or after the season, in November of 1943, Bucky Harris came out and accused Cox of betting on the Phillies, betting on games, which is a huge no-no. And even though he resigned and everything, Harris actually testified against him in court. And Landis, our man Landis, who's still at the helm in 1943, bans him from baseball.
Wow.
And he's actually the last owner that's ever been banned of today. So we'll have to look a little bit more into Cox's story, because he's kind of a fascinating character.
Yeah, and Harris was the whistleblower then, huh?
Yeah, so, and then he was forced to sell the team as well. Yep.
Wow, that's wild. And what position did Harris play?
He played in the infield. He played second base.
Okay. And the Senators did have obviously a good pitching staff, because they still had Walter Johnson, right?
And Walter Johnson, not to jump ahead too far, but they're going to have a pretty good season here in a couple of years.
So here's something else I found looking at the Senators pitcher staff, a name that jumped out at me, Jose Acosta. So then, you know, 1921, you're like, there weren't a lot of Spanish names in the rosters. So I looked him up a little bit. He was from Cuba, and apparently, you know, obviously the racial politics are insane, because if you were, you know, of a certain skin hue, you were allowed to play, I guess. And Acosta was a light-skinned Cuban, so he was in the MLB, and he pitched for the Senators. He had a really good year. And then I was just curious to see, like, what other Cuban-born players played around that time, just for my own curiosity. And there was one you'll never guess was from Cuba. Our man Dolph Luque, or however you say his name. Dolph. I thought he was, like, German. And his last name is Luque, but it's probably, Adolfo, or they shortened his Spanish-sounding name to make him Dolph. So he was a Cuban player. And then I found this guy named Mike Gonzalez, that just sounds like a dude from – I feel like I have his baseball card.
Sounds like a relief pitcher from – yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I have his 88 scorecard in my binder at home, and he was on the Rangers, and his name was Mike Gonzalez. But no, he was a Cuban pitcher who played from 1912 to 1932. Yeah, 20-year career as early as 1912, a Cuban-born Mike Gonzalez. So that was just interesting.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, a little interesting tangent to come across looking at the Senators and their hot start and their pitching staff. So, yeah, pretty interesting number of characters there. I also looked, just because the name jumped out at me, the Tigers had a pitcher named Suds Sutherland. Suds, S-U-D-S, Suds Sutherland. So, and he was 3-0. He was off to a hot start. I was like, that's a great name, Suds Sutherland. And so then I looked up a little bit about him, and I found a fact that I didn't know, which is that Ty Cobb was managing the Tigers this year. Did you know that?
You know, I mean, it's always surprising to hear about how many player managers there were at the time, that's for sure.
Yeah, this was Cobb's first year as a manager. So 1920, he was a good player. 1921, I mean, obviously for many years, he was a good player. But 1921 was the first year they gave him the managerial role. So, of course, I wondered, like, what kind of manager was Ty Cobb? And I did not have to look far, because in the article about Suds Sutherland, it tells you a little bit about what Cobb was like as a manager. I'm just going to read it to you. This is in June of 21. Suds gave up a long home run to, who else, Babe Ruth, with the ball shooting into the upper deck. Cobb ran in from center field. So he was obviously playing defense, but also managing. Cobb ran in from center field and took his anger out on the rookie pitcher. The Tigers pitching staff had given up 6 home runs to the Babe during that 4-game series, with only one of those being given up by Suds. Nevertheless, Suds took the brunt of Cobb's anger, and even though he had the team's best win-loss record at the time, he never played for the Tigers again or in the major leagues except for one inning of relief and one pinch hit appearance.
So that's what Ty Cobb, yeah.
That's what Cobb was like as a manager. You hit a home run, he runs in from center field and ends your career. What a monster.
Yeah, imagine playing for him.
I know. Suds was 6-2 at the time as a rookie. He gives up one dinger. The team had given up 6. He gives up a dinger to the greatest hitter in the history of the world. And his team had given up 6 home runs to Ruth in a 4-game series. But Cobb just got so angry at this particular long shot that he just comes in, sprints in from center field, takes Suds out of the game, and never plays him again.
And he was wasn't he like a good pitcher? Yeah.
He was 6-2 at the time. He had the team's best record, and he never played again. He was a rookie. That's insane.
That Ty alone. Cobb. I mean, like, I know like it's fashionable now to like look back at Ty Cobb and say he wasn't that much of a jerk, right? And
just, come like, on. Oh, man. Ask Suds Sutherland.
I think just his reputation probably as being a jerk was probably pretty accurate, you know?
Yes, for the sure.
Revisionists want to talk about how maybe he was not as mean as people say. I mean, God. Well,
there was apparently a biography written of Cobb by someone who was really not fair in his research. So in that regard, you could say that that original bio was biased. That's true. That doesn't mean every anecdote about Cobb being a monster is untrue. It just means that one book was garbage.
Yeah.
Here's another little tidbit I found for you, just to follow up from something I was talking about last week, was why didn't Home Run Baker start for the Yankees on opening day? We were looking at opening day rosters. We know Home Run Baker was their big third baseman signing. And I looked it up. And so he was actually, he had to plead for reinstatement because he walked off, I guess you would call it, or walked out from camp in the 1920 year following his wife's death. But because he did that, he was automatically, I don't know what the word is, banned. He was, or not banned permanently, but he was automatically, suspended is the word. So Baker was automatically suspended from the major leagues for not reporting to camp in 1920. And so then the Yankees signed him and he still couldn't come and play. He had to do this whole like legal process essentially to beg Landis to be reinstated into the game. And Landis, to his credit, did reinstate him. He didn't like, but they were that serious about it that if you refuse to show up for camp for any reason, including your wife's funeral, then like you're suspended from the league.
And it's Home Run Baker. It's got to be so rough.
Home Run Baker. And then so Aaron Ward was the guy who filled in and was really good, actually. And then Baker, actually, I just happened to see jumping ahead to the season. He did have a sort of bad ankle injury. So he doesn't have a full 1921, but it wasn't because of injury that he wasn't in the opening day roster. That was what I assumed when I looked at the rosters, but it was actually this suspension that he was appealing. So that was just another little update from last week. One other little thing. I mean, just, I feel like every article I got is so funny. This is just a headline I wanted to read you. Cleveland wins at home. Tris Speaker presented with automobile, cowboy saddle, and bridle by fans. So in order to thank the Gray Eagle for his championship season the previous year, a bunch of fans got together to give him gifts. And these are the gifts they gave him: a car, a cowboy saddle, I guess, and a bridle is also what, a horse thing.
Yeah.
I just feel like you don't see stuff like that anymore. You just don't see fans giving a player a saddle. And I feel like you should.
Yeah. Yeah, I want like a saddle as an award.
Who doesn't?
Never use it. But yeah,
but we still want one. Let's talk a little bit more about Ruth and his amazing start to the year, because you can't say enough about it. And also, he's been in the news here in the modern day for two reasons. First of all, just 2 days ago, April 27th, I heard several places mention Babe Ruth Day. celebrated across Major League Baseball. I never heard of Babe Ruth Day as a day. Did you?
I think I heard of it like when I watched some of those like old cheesy like made for TV baseball movies as a kid. They talked about.
And so maybe this was like.
Yeah.
This was maybe that famous picture of Babe, maybe looking kind of like glum at the end of his career. I'm not sure if it was taken that day, but Babe Ruth Day was celebrated at the end of his career, 1947. So not even at the end of his career, at the end of his life. So the Major League Baseball, I guess, knew he was really ill. And so made a day to honor him across Major League Baseball. So he died in 1948. So I forget what year he was born, but obviously that was pretty young.
He was in his early 50s, I think.
Yeah. So they must have known he was quite ill. And so they had a day to honor him across Major League Baseball in 1947. And so MLB still honors that every year as a day to officially honor the Babe. So April 27th. And why else was Babe Ruth in the news, Sweet Brad? I'll set you up since I know you're a big fan of this this modern player.
Ooh.
Garnering Ruthian comparisons.
Is it something to do with Mr. Shohei Ohtani-san?
That's right. Showtime, baby.
Love
Showtime. Showtime Ohtani. Someone called him Showtime on the How could you not? For the first time since 1921, the starting pitcher in a major league game was also the league leader in home runs. So Ohtani has 7 home runs already.
It's been unbelievable.
Yeah. And is the league leader or the major league leader tied for the MLB leader and became the first home run leader to be the starting pitcher for a game since Babe Ruth started on June 13th, 1921. So Showtime is doing Ruthian things. And also, I was just kind of curious. I didn't find the total answer, but I was kind of curious why Ruth started that game. If you remember in 1920, he pitched a handful of times, but he didn't get the ball until June of this 21 season. He won that game. He wasn't great. He gave up a couple of runs, but he got the win. And then he pitched again later in the year and he gave up like 5 runs in 5 innings or something. And then didn't pitch again. He didn't pitch another batter until 1930. So he pitched just 2 games this year. I'm not sure why. Like, were they short arms? Did he just want to?
You know, it's weird. It's like with Ohtani recently, you know, he was – I think Joe Madden's like the manager now in the Angels, and to pitch him and hit him at the same time. But before that, they weren't really doing that. Maybe that was similar convention back then. I don't know.
He seems to do better. Ohtani seems to do better as a hitter on the days that
he's – Yeah, and I think it was another statistic where he was like the first pitcher since like the 19-teens to hit higher than third or something in the lineup.
Or something. I believe it.
Yeah, and then you know, and lots of other statistics having to do with that as well. So, yeah, I mean, I would think honestly, in some way that like pitching and being able to hit in the same game would somehow relieve the pressure in some way. I don't know. Maybe not.
They find that some guys hit better in games they play the field too, as opposed to pitching.
Right.
Some guys just need that
when you're active, right?
And yeah, exactly.
They say that in golf too. Like, you know, sometimes if you walk the course versus taking a cart, maybe you play better kind of
thing. Yeah, it keeps you locked
in. Muscles are being used more regularly kind of thing. So
I'm curious to see why they would end up pitching Ruth in a game in 1930. I'd like to look that up and see why he ended up getting an inning way later in his career. Just for fun, maybe. Like when did you happen to see yesterday when Anthony Rizzo struck out Freddie Freeman because the Cubs were getting shelled. So they put in, and they're really good friends. And, you know, Rizzo is obviously not a pitcher, but he struck out Freeman, who's like one of the best hitters in the world. And they were both like cracking up about it. It was like, just like, it's like when you play your friend in Little League, you know?
Yeah.
It was so funny. They were like cracking up. So maybe Ruth was just a mop up role, but yeah. Why bring him in a game? I'm curious. I got one more thing for you. One of our listeners, fans of the pod, Jack Burke, also my father, gave me a gift of a set of postcards that shows the Mount Rushmore of the Negro Leagues. So, of course, Mount Rushmore is the 4 greats of anything, right? And right. So this artist decided to hit us with the four who he would put on the Mount Rushmore of the Negro Leagues. So I'm going to quiz you and see who your Mount Rushmore of the Negro Leagues is. And see, it's not a quiz. Just see if you would have the same four as these fellows. So
this is tough.
This is tough. Do you want me to give you a hint?
Well, I think I can get two right off the bat.
Okay.
I think I can get Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige out of the way.
You got it. You got it.
Now, the other two are going to be tough. And one of the things in the back of my mind is, you know, there were a couple of players that played in the major leagues. Well, Satchel Paige did as well.
Right.
There's a couple of small like Jackie right. Robinson that did play in the Negro Leagues.
Right.
All right. And I don't know if they would be on there or not. My first other instinct would be Cool Papa Bell.
You got it. 3 for 3.
Oh, man.
Cool Papa Bell. And can I give you a hint for the other one?
Was he heavily featured in the baseball by Ken Burns?
He was heavily featured in this podcast, but not for his work on the field.
Buck Owens?
Nope. He was heavily featured for his role as a magnet.
Oh, Rube Foster.
You got it. So Rube wasn't a great player.
Yeah.
But they gave him the...
That's, I like part. That. Yeah.
Because Rube organized the league. And then they gave the battery of Gibson and Paige, pitcher and catcher. And then, do you know what position Cool Papa Bell played? I don't know why you would. Just to
curious. Was he played outfield?
Yeah, center fielder.
Yeah,
He was just known as being the fastest guy in the field. So that's why that's presumably he played center. And so there you go. These are beautiful cards, and they have all sorts of cool information about each of the guys. But I just wanted to give you a quiz.
Cool.
I give it to you. I give you the.
I'll take
give
three you, out of four. You know,
750.
I'm okay with
750 batting average. Sort of Bucky Harris numbers.
Oh, Bucky. You know, there's a lot about Bucky we could be talking about more, too. I feel like I dropped the ball on Bucky. So.
Cool. We'll dig in some more into Bucky, and we'll see if we can continue to get the vacuum sweepers on your thinkeries and give you things to think about the 1921 season, on and off the field, MLB and Negro Leagues. Love reading about these players from Cuba. There's always so many interesting stories to unearth. So we will continue to do so. We will see you on Twitter at 1920s Baseball. And we will see you next time on This Week in 1920s Baseball.
Later.